570.
His name is David Vasek. Broadcasting straight from his home. His family probably wishes that he was still on the road, but he can't. Still, he's got a job to do. So he's talking Dodger baseball with each and every one of you. So while we sit waiting on games or waiting on names like Andre or Big Mac to crap on Vasek, Dodger talk without the baseball for a while, the time has come. So here it is, pandemic style.
Oh yeah, it is Wednesday night, and you know what that means. Even at an hour earlier, 6 o'clock moving forward, because we have Dodgers replay every weeknight at 7 o'clock right here on Dodgers Radio, AM 570 LA Sports. Dodger Talk with you from 6 to 7, and every Wednesday night, like I mentioned, it is Dre Day here on Dodger Talk. The one and only Andre Ethier joins us from Yuma, Arizona, or maybe even Tombstone at this point. Andre, where are you? Tombstone today?
I'm following the rules in home quarantine here in Phoenix.
Have you adjusted your quarantine food? I mean, I think I've adjusted mine to 5 different wines now instead of food and wine.
I think I added a few, and I think I added pretzels with, you know, the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them, like those little pretzel round things. I'm on those. I found my kids, holiday candy, and one of them had a bag of old Sour Patch Kids, and I found those. Jeez. So I think I like Sour Patch Kids now. So
you really are quarantined if you're dipping into the Halloween bag.
Halloween bag was thrown out a long time ago. I think it was the kids from Christmas season and stuff, and we were cleaning out the boys' rooms and tucked behind some of their clothes in their drawers. There's a stash of candy. I'm like, what do you guys hide this back here for? So kind of funny. The things you find and things you do during quarantine to keep your time and occupy everything. I found myself today doing a little bit of oiling of some wood furniture. And, I'm doing it all right now and having fun and, just hoping everyone else is obeying this time and making sure they're doing what it's right for, their neighbor and everyone else out there who's going through this, together.
Yeah, and we all want to thank everybody for listening to us to get away from all that, and we want to thank all the doctors and nurses out there that are on the front lines who are definitely putting themselves at risk more than anybody else. And I don't think a day or a minute.
Hey, Dave, let's not forget about those nurses and doctors and everyone out there is doing a great job. But how about these teachers? I mean, we have this full-on homeschooling going on now, and my goodness, this is I commend teachers a lot more for – I only have to deal with 2. I can't imagine a class of 15, 20, 25 kids having to do all the schoolwork all these parents are having to do with all this home school stuff. So I definitely hat off to those teachers and the job they do year in and year out of teaching all our kids.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I hear the Zoom class that my first grader does, and that's a zoo on Zoom. If it's incredible.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, learning some of the stuff. I start getting anxiety and the sweats opening up my fifth grader's, curriculum for the day and having to rehash and have the feeling of, oh, gosh, I have to learn this all over again and figure out how to look it up on the internet real quick and act like I knew it all along.
Hey, well, fifth grader learning level is about freshman year at Arizona State, right?
Yeah, we can call it that. I don't even know if it's that, really.
You got no response to that. You've got no comeback to that one.
No, I would agree. The good Arizona State, that's how it was. Now they're trying to be an academic school. So let's be real. Keep Arizona State a party school, right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially when the pandemic is lifted. I think that's where everybody wants to go to college and maybe hit up Mill Avenue down there.
Hey, did you get your uncle to get you a little promo song? What's that promo song you got there, your intro song coming into the show?
Yeah, see, it's a real radio show here now, right? You like that? Eminem, 8 Mile, yeah. our rip-off Eminem right there. Bob Schmidt, our yeah, imaging guy.
Well, since your uncle's staying at home now during quarantine, he had time to get the keyboard out and the old school NC mixer and get a little song for you.
Yeah, there you go. And he even mentioned you. He gave you a token mention.
I did. I heard that.
Hey, Andre Ethier is taking your phone calls until 7 o'clock tonight between in and out of us going at it for a full hour to take you away from whatever's on your mind. We're talking baseball. We're talking quarantine. And coming up at 7 o'clock, we have Dodgers replay. We are going to replay the April 21st game from a year ago in Milwaukee. It was Belly versus Yelly on primetime, I guess, on center stage, because Cody Bellinger showed the world that he was going to be challenging Yelich early on for the National League MVP when he hit the go-ahead home run in the top of the ninth inning. But even more importantly, he robbed Yelich of a home run in right field in the bottom of the eighth inning. We were at Miller Park, Andre. Were you watching that game back at home?
We were watching that game, and I think you start of it was my two boys were watching all those commercials all summer, the Yelly and Belly commercials, and they kind of had that mark on their calendar as a game we had to watch, and I think it was a very solidifying moment for Belly in his MVP season to show that two guys that were neck and neck all year and. How he upped him just a little bit, I think, to tilt everyone else's eyes and showing that he was well deserving of that MVP last year.
Hey, how about that home run he hit in that game in Milwaukee last year? It wasn't just off any relief pitcher; it was off Josh Hader, lefty on lefty crime there, Dre.
Yeah, that is that's a nightmare at bat right there. You see him and. Hader and that funk and that arm angle, that velocity he's throwing, not a good matchup, and let alone being a lefty on lefty. And he bared down and kept his front shoulder in and put a good swing on a ball and hit a home run there. So it's one where I think it all accumulated at that moment and showed that Belly was like I said, well deserving and carrying that team to an MVP caliber season.
So Dodgers replay tonight at 7 o'clock. We will relive that game, and it was maybe one of the top five most memorable from 2019. I'm curious. You've been involved in a lot of really good games as a Dodger. If you had to choose one game you wanted to hear on Dodgers replay, which one would it be?
I would say, that was a tough one. It was kind of like from 2012 to now, you kind of gave me the option of, and that was tough to go back in that role of the game. But for me, I saw a lot of things throughout my career of playing Major League Baseball, but I had never been on the winning side, on my side of a no-hitter. I had been no-hit before from the other side, but I had never been on a no-hitter on my side. My first one came in 14 there in Philly when Josh Beckett was pitching, and I think he was a getaway day game there in Philly, and Beckett threw that no-hitter. And I just remember from being that perspective, being so nervous for him going through it and getting a chance to finally see a no-hitter from a player's perspective on the winning side was an unbelievable experience, even though it wasn't me up there on the mound. So I would love to possibly listen to that game again and get a chance to be on the edge of my seat and kind of relive all those moments of being in the dugout, being on the field, and just hoping and wishing for those outs to keep ticking and everyone celebrate.
Hey, we'll try to make that happen for you at some point between now and the start of the 2020 baseball season. Andre was starting in center field that day in Philadelphia back in 2014, and if I remember correctly, A.J. Ellis actually turned his ankle stepping on Drew Butera's catcher's mask in the celebration, right?
Yeah, really bad too. It was, I think it put him out for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ugly. I remember on the back to LA, he was leg up in the plane with we have these machines. They're like air compression and ice machines all in one, and it puts a boot over your leg and it compresses with air and throws cold water through it, so it kind of gives you a little ice and compression at the same time. And for that 5.5 hours flight back to LA, I don't think he took that thing off one time. It had it elevated up in his thing, and fingers were crossed, and plane lands, and he's hobbling pretty bad. And it was one of the things where it was worth it, but at the end of it, and I think the next day, I think he was a little bit embarrassed of the outcome after the celebration of that, no-hitter.
Hey, you've been through a lot of celebrations, whether it's winning the division, being part of that no-hitter, being the guy that hit the walk-off home run. After Kendrys Morales broke his leg with the Angels that one time in 08, I think it was, do you think players became more self-conscious of trying not to get hurt in those type of celebrations?
I think they did, but then, you've seen some of the stuff lately. Some of the stuff lately is pretty outrageous, but it's fun. I'm not going to lie. Some of these walk-off celebrations and stuff is great. I think it tailored it for a little bit, and people are very cautious of it. But I think some of them are just, freak accidents that happen. And rightly so, guys are excited. Guys want to celebrate and have that, that you work so hard over the course of the year. And there's few moments in the game of baseball where you get to celebrate over the course of the season like that. Obviously, in the playoffs we do, celebrate like that. When you keep winning, but over the course of a year, there's not many games. You win a game, you walk off the field, high fives, go home, do it again, and show up. So it's not because we have this just real, exuberant, areas, and we do stuff like that. So it's one where, we were really excited, for it, and it's one where it's deserving of that celebration going forward.
Yeah, well, Andre knows about that. He is known as Captain Clutch during his 12 years with the Dodgers. We're going to take a time out here on Dodger Talk. He has other nicknames that I've given him, but we're not going to go into those during this hour, Andre. What we are going to get into... what we are going to get into coming up is Tiger King. You want to know what Andre Ethier thought about Tiger King and whether or not he thought Carol fed her husband to those tigers. We're getting into that next. And we may have a special guest joining us at the bottom of the hour to surprise Andre Ethier. So don't go anywhere. Wednesdays with Dre until 7 o'clock, 866-987-2570. Dodger Talk right here on AM 570 LA Sports. It is Wednesday. That means it is Dre Day. Wednesday nights with Andre Ethier until 7 o'clock. And the phone lines are open at 866-987-2570. Coming up at 7 o'clock, Dodgers replay. Replaying that Dodgers-Brewers game from a year ago where belly giveth and belly taketh away from the Brewers in that exciting road win. And we are with you until 7 o'clock right here on Dodger Talk. In case you don't know, you can listen to Dodger Talk by downloading the iHeartRadio app, and you can listen anywhere to AM 570 LA Sports by doing that. All right, Andre, a lot of people are streaming these days, and I know you're usually ahead of the curve, but I finally convinced my wife to be able to watch Tiger King with me this week. At first, she wanted no part of it, but I convinced her, let's watch this together, and she couldn't get enough. Have you and Mrs. Ethier watched Tiger King together?
We have, Dr. Howard Baskin. we got a chance to... You're the Howard Baskins of your household, I can tell. I feel like your wife probably rules the house like Carol does, and you just sit there and follow her around like old Howard does in the show. But yeah, we got a chance.
Well, we sent a letter to him.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. See, yes. What did you say, Carol? Yes, Carol. we saw about a week ago on Netflix, and I think it was just when it was really getting up and going, you're seeing all over social media, everywhere, all over TV. And so we decided to watch it. I think we almost finished the show that night. We stayed up all night and just kept watching every episode because you couldn't believe that this is real. I thought it was like one of those mockumentaries at first, right? Like, you feel like this can't be real. And then it just kept going. You're like, wow, this is really real. Then you pick up your phone, of course, because then you want to Google these people. And they're like, wow, this is real. Like the whole real subculture phenomenon going on in across America. And the shocking thing to me was that there's 8,000 to 10,000 tigers in private zoos in the U.S. And there's only 4,000 left in the world. That doesn't make sense to me, right?
Yeah, I thought the same thing when they showed it at the very end. You're like, wait a minute, what? They're endangered in the wild, but more people own them in the United States, which is wild. How many big cats do you own? How many big cats do you own?
Well, I mean, considering the price on them, I guess you could get yourself one, but none here in my home. I'm kind of shocked. I mean, do you really want a 400 or 500 pound giant cat who can, as we saw on the show, rip off your arm at any moment and probably do way worse, and obviously be way worse than that around you? I don't know. I don't know if there's a cage big enough I would want one in my backyard.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want that either. And I was shocked. Every time they would get close, kiss the lion, kiss the tiger, I was like, when are these lions and tigers going to fight back and just rip their head off?
I mean, they were perfect characters in the show also.
Wow.
You
love those Joe Exotic music videos, don't you?
Honestly, he is kind of good in a way, I think. I think I would be lying if I didn't tell you I did YouTube his videos to see the whole thing, and they were pretty interesting, and he's not too bad. He might have a calling.
I'm sorry to break this to you, but it wasn't him singing. It was a voiceover guy doing the singing. I'm sorry.
Well, he has a great production, and he does it really well. So. It's worked for other people in the industry to have a voiceover, so why not him?
Yeah, why not? It was entertaining. And now here's the million-dollar question. My favorite scene? Ah, man. I thought the most, compelling episode was the one about Carol possibly feeding her husband to the lions. I love conspiracy theories, and that is a huge conspiracy right there. There is no doubt. She knows where her husband disappeared.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I mean, you can see by her reactions and looks when every time she brings it up. And there's no doubt in my mind either. If Joe's out of jail, which is probably not where he wanted to be. But if one thing he wanted to prove was that Carol killed her husband, and I think he did a good job by doing that in the show.
I just saw a story online.
Not the greatest tactics he used, but.
Very interesting tactics, and he leads a very abnormal life. I would not say that's a normal life. And Doc does not lead a normal life either.
No. the multiple spouses was the... When you read the description of the the show on Netflix, you're like surrounded by polygamy and wildcats and all, you're like, wait, what's going on here? You're like, it doesn't make sense. Like that's where it kind of gets you. But I do highly recommend it. It's a great quarantine show in day 237, whatever one we're in right now.
I would say when they go back and do a retrospective on this quarantine, Tiger King definitely will be in that documentary.
100%. I think it's like, when you're in high school and they show your 4 years of high school, like what happened over those 4 years, the events that happened, Tiger King is going to be the image that pops up on everything, the montage, 2020. This is what happened. COVID and Joe Exotic.
Yes, exactly. And now Carol is saying that she thought she was doing a... What's that?
And I said, and Dodgers are going to finally be on TV, but no one can watch them because there's no games.
Not yet. What do you think about that? I feel like there's a good possibility. That's one piece of a hint that baseball may start the season in empty stadiums where you can only watch them on TV. I feel like that's the direction this is going, if there's any hope of a 2020 baseball season.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I know me, I know probably a lot of other people, you know, they would rather be there and see the games themselves. But, I mean, at this point, beggars can't be choosers, right? I mean, we're stuck with nothing. And I think if it's getting the guys back out there on the field, and it has to be in empty stadiums with, you know, just the players playing games, but, you know, some type of media coverage. Maybe we can come up with some kind of nice live streaming too. Come up with a deal with one of these things for some nice live stream to keep the fans a little more interactive, you know, with what's going on in the field or something like that. But I think that's definitely the avenue it's going to run down if and, you know, when this does allow us to get back to, you know, some type of sports. But
hey, if the Dodgers are playing in Arizona, you might be the sideline reporter. If the Dodgers are playing in Arizona, they might need somebody local, and that might be you.
Yeah, I'll order my bubble. I'll get in one of those bubbles and go out there and and have my quarantine bubble and sit over there in the pit, the camera well, and talk about the game. Why not?
All right, sounds good. Hey, we're going to take a timeout because we may have a special guest calling in our next segment. And if we don't, we had a special guest last night say some very special words about you. So we got something special for you either way on the other side of this. So don't go anywhere. Dodger Talk with Andre Ethier until 7 o'clock right here on AM 570 LA Sports. Dodger Talk with you until 7 o'clock right here on AM 570 LA Sports. And coming up at the top of the hour, it is Dodgers Replay. We have that for you every weeknight right here on Dodgers Radio, AM 570 LA Sports, reliving some classic games since the Dodgers have been broadcasting on AM 570 LA Sports. And tonight we'll go back to last year, one of the more memorable games of the season. It was early on, April 21st in Milwaukee, the finale of that series where Cody Bellinger hit the go-ahead home run, and in the half inning prior, Rob Christian Yelich of a home run as well, and the Dodgers would go on to escape Milwaukee with a W. A guy that has had some big wins and some losses in Milwaukee, that's the one and only Andre Ethier. He is with us until 7 o'clock, and I've heard from so many different players, Andre, about Miller Park, how it may be one of the best ballparks to hit in because of that hitter's eye in center field. Is that the same experience you had?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one experience. That hitter's eye, plus I feel like the ball flies there. I don't know if it's the airflow of the way that, you know, the dome, the stadium is, and they open up those panels out in right and left center, and it seems to kind of jet stream out anytime you hit a ball there. So, yeah, it's that batter's eye makes that pitcher seem like they're, you know, throwing in 3D, and, you know, it's unbelievable when you see that ball coming at you off that big green screen, and then you get a ball from the air, and it definitely goes.
It's no secret. Chase Field in Arizona and Milwaukee were built by the same architect. They look almost identical on the inside and kind of on the outside. Did you have the same success and same feeling at Chase Field as you did at Miller Park? Was it almost playing in the same place?
Yeah, it does. It kind of gives you that deja vu feel when you don't realize where you're at, and you look up and it almost looks like, I think they both have that TGI Fridays too, right? And
yeah.
Up in left field.
Yeah.
Similar restaurant too. So I don't know if that was buy one, get one free for those two stadiums or something when they're being built. But, you know, both those are very similar. I think Arizona though has addressed their ball flying. They put their ball in a humidor now, and I think a lot of guys I've heard have been complaining how that ball doesn't fly the same way in Arizona anymore. You know, and I think some of these stadiums like that, Arizona, Milwaukee, I've heard it in Toronto too, some of these domes, they know how to play the tricks with the opening. You know, you ever hear any stories about them opening panels for the home team when the ball flies out, and then they'll close them for when the visiting team's up. All these tricks these stadiums learn with the way the ball flies because of, opening panels, opening doors and stuff like that during certain times of the night when their team's up or vice versa.
Interesting.
Have you ever heard any of that stuff? State?
I did, but I never believed that it was true. I thought the rules were they have to be the same for each team hitting in that inning.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, the panel, like, I think the panel, the roof has to, but I don't know, like, the panels in left and right field. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I thought it was under the same rules.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Who knows? There's probably a door monitor out there, right? And they'll be put the door monitor out there to make sure that the doors are safe or fair for everyone.
Yeah, right. I don't buy that at all. I mean, if you remember the Lakers and Celtics and some of the things Red Auerbach would do at the Boston Garden, I feel like some of these other opposing teams are doing that to the Dodgers, especially with the success you guys have had the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think, not to rip off old scabs and wounds, but, you know, all the Houston Astros stuff that came out about them, I know a lot of teams were pointing fingers at the Dodgers and us as players and as an organization for the success everyone's had and the caliber and the level everyone's been playing at. The Dodgers have to be cheating. That's what everyone said. But I don't think they gave the players and the talent and, the way the front office and coaches prepare every day and the way the players are going out there and executing it, enough credit. So, there's a lot of different things that go on during the course of a year that add up to wins or add up to teams trying to get an advantage. And, I think some of these, even stadiums, even the workers of the stadiums get involved in it. So,
that is wild.
It fun. It is. That's what makes it fun and makes it a part of, the game gives you that true home field advantage. I think, a lot of them though have been even the playing field and, I think at Dodger Stadium, but I think just a nice loud crowd is enough to intimidate an opposing team most nights.
Hey, speaking of those TGI Fridays in Milwaukee and Arizona, you ever gone into one of those?
I have. Yes, I have. Once I have. I think I was 2001 or 2002 when I was in college. Someone had an event at one of them and during the game, and I got a chance to sit there and walk out on the little balcony where if you see highlights there, some guys will hit home runs and BP even in games up there, and got to sit on that balcony for one of the games. And yeah, it's actually a nice view and a nice seat. I guess it's their version of the Monster, as Fenway would, but I guess you get TGI Friday's meal with it. A lot of flair, as they would say in the office.
Hey, while you were at that TGI Fridays, I was at the TGI Fridays in the San Fernando Valley in Woodland Hills, and I would stay for not only the early happy hour, but some nights I would stay for the happy hour starting up again at 10 o'clock.
Oh, all-nighter, huh? With you and Danny LaRusso?
Yeah, me and Daniel would ride our bikes home after that night at TGI Fridays.
Yeah. Watch out for those guys in the skeleton outfit hiding around the dirt field from you,
Yeah, thanks for the tip. I appreciate it. 866-987-2570. We got some people that want to talk to you, Andre.
All right. Hey, let's get to that. Remind me, I have something for you to, I need to ask for something about a clip or something. So remind me at the end of the show. Because I need your producers to dial it in for me.
All right. Sounds good. We'll go out to Oxnard, and then you can ask for that. Crystal, you're on Dodger Talk. Say hi to Andre Ethier.
Hi, Andre. It's Crystal.
Hey, Crystal. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I am a huge, longtime fan, as I'm sure everybody who's calling is. And I also heard you talking about teachers and giving that shout out. I'm actually going to school to become a teacher. And this is my last semester. And, when we finish, we get to go out and have our own classrooms and, do our thing. So I really like that you gave that shout out.
Yeah, no problem. We appreciate it. And, sorry to hear that this is your last semester and you're probably not going to get to experience, a graduation or anything like that. But, we're really appreciative of all you teachers. I'm even more appreciative now after having to go 2 weeks of being Mr. Teacher. And, my kid's school teacher stinks now. I'll tell you that. It's a bad school teacher they have now at home.
Oh, so, don't blame the teachers. Come on. Don't blame the teachers.
And me. I'm a teacher. I'm a bad teacher. They got a bad teacher, principal, everything now.
Don't be pointing the fingers. You got to point the finger at yourself.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the teacher. That's what I'm saying. They got a bad teacher now. And it's me.
I feel bad for your kids. They have you trying to help them through schoolwork. How's that going?
All I know is how to get up to 4 and 3, you know, 4 balls, 3 strikes. So once you start having to get past those buckets and you fill up those buckets, I can't do much more.
All right. At least you're honest. 866-987-2570. All right. You have something for me, so you can ask me, and I got something for you after. All right. So go ahead.
You were asking, you know, I hear you guys going to be playing games every night, correct?
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock. I would like the producers to put together. One of my fondest memories is all the celebrations. You know, I was lucky enough to play in L.A. and have many playoff runs. But when they need to put a montage of all the times you were in the celebration getting champagne spilled and sprayed on you and all the great noises and things you make during that. So I would like, hopefully the producers and everyone in the studio or whoever's there can put a montage of all the Dave Vasquez interviews doing in a celebration during the playoffs and how he just freezes up and can't say anything and starts saying it's so cold, it stings, all that stuff. That's probably something he was hearing for a while.
I felt like you all were looking for me, and luckily I always get credit for never wearing goggles. You got to give me credit for that. No goggles. That's for softies.
Yeah, I mean, you're a pro. You get in there, and you're not afraid to mix it up and go for it. And, you know, we're very grateful that someone is not wearing the goggles in there because it makes it that much more fun when that champagne gets in your eyes and you can't see for about 2 minutes.
And then another one comes. A right hook comes with another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I got one for you. I got a flashback for you. You talked about 2017. You've talked about some great teammates that you've had over the last couple of weeks. And we had one of your teammates that you really like, and he likes you incredibly the same way. And that is Charlie Culberson, because last night on Dodger Replay, we played his walk-off home run to win the division at Dodger Stadium in 2016. And here's what he said about you and your relationship in the 2 years you guys were teammates with the Dodgers.
One thing that comes up to mind is getting to wear his number in Atlanta. I picked 16 because of Andre, what he meant to me, kind of showed me the ropes. He took me under his wing, even though I wasn't the youngest guy in the clubhouse. But I got to be really close with him, and he taught me a lot and just his work ethic and, you know, how he went about his business every day and then the kind of family man he is, too. It means a lot, so. Yeah, he knows I love him, and I hope the best for him and his family.
And that was Charlie Culberson last night, Dre. Can you believe that? He had those nice words for you?
It's hard to believe, but no, me and Chuck, we had a great time together. Those 2 years here in L.A., his locker was right near mine. And, you know, I think we talked about last show about how, you know, just certain personalities off the field, you know, mesh well. And how everything comes together with clubhouse and is pulling together in the same way. But, you know, that season wears on, and you need your couple buddies here and there that you can go out and do stuff, and he was definitely one. And I think he was going through at the same time as me. His wife was pregnant, and so was mine. So we both were pregnant with little girls around the same time and going through that same stuff. So it was one where we hit it off because of that, and you know, it was just a great thing. And I was very excited for him when he got a chance to go over there to – Atlanta, his hometown, and get a chance to play there. And unfortunately, you know, had a rough end to the season last year. You know, with the way it came in there, by getting hit by that pitch. And you know, I'm glad to hear and see that everything's back to normal and he's, you know, ready to get back out there whenever it starts up again.
What do you remember the most about that day when he hit that walk-off home run? And it was Vin Scully's last broadcast at Dodger Stadium. What do you remember when you saw the ball come off the bat? Did you know it was gone right away?
I felt like I was in a movie. You know, it's like it can we know what Vin means. You know, we know what he means to, you know, the Dodgers, what he means to all the Dodger fans who listen to him on the radio, who listen to him on TV, all that stuff. You know, his historic calls, this, you know, you, I think any Dodger fan can close their eyes right now and hear Vin Scully making some type of call. You know, it's still in my family today. We say, you know, a great sunset here in Arizona, it's a cotton candy, you know, sky, you know, one of Vin's favorite calls in the evening. So for him to, you know, finally call it quit in this one game, this is his last game he's going to call, and it's going to be the accumulation of, you know, his entire career. And to Charlie, to get up the bat, stadium, everyone on their feet, balls hit, goes over the fence, Vin's in the, you know, looking up at Vin, and Vin's, you know, visibly emotional about the moment, standing there, everyone's turning to Vin. And that moment is something that it still gives me goosebumps today to realize how something, a guy's career and a historic career, it was so great and so perfect, ended in the perfect way, too.
Yeah, so, and it was great that Charlie got that bat signed.
Yeah, unbelievable, right? I mean, I can, like I said, still see that and just feel that excitement. And I mean, that's as loud and as long as I've ever heard an ovation in Dodger Stadium, you know, in the 12 years I was there, and rightfully so, you know, for Mr. Scully there, who was well deserving of everything he got and the send-off he got. You know, you hear it, the baseball gods were shining down and made it right and fitting for him to be sent off, you know, his Dodger career and calling games in that booth all those years.
Hey, I don't want to get too deep, but when a player wears a jersey number and says he's wearing it for a certain person, David Price is wearing 33 this year for James Shields because of what their relationship was like in Tampa Bay. But when you heard that Charlie Culberson was going to wear 16 in honor of you, I mean, is there any greater honor that you can get from a peer?
No, I don't think so. I think that's an unbelievable honor. He really didn't say anything to me at the beginning, but then at the end of spring training, when he definitely made that club, he sent me a text and, you know, hey, look what number I picked. And I saw 16, and I really didn't, it didn't register to me. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Sweet number. I like it. And he's like, yeah, I picked it. You know, it was one that was available and I wanted to, you know, wear it, you know, because of you. And so that's a pretty special thing to say and have. You don't realize, like you said, the relationship you form, the way the impacts you have on people, you don't realize how it affects them and what it might have meant to them. And, you know, I think he showed it right there. And, you know, I was very honored that he was out there wearing my number for that year. And, you know, he was doing it because of me. So, you know, made me feel good. And every time I was able to see the game, you know, he was playing and just think of that. So, yeah, it's nice. And I heard the same thing. I talked to David about that because I got a chance to play with Jamie Shields in 2005 on that fall league team that got us all together, you know, from when I was in Oakland A. That's the first chance that the Dodgers really got a chance to see me in the fall league there in 2005. The Tampa Bay team was also on our team. So I got a chance to play with Jamie and then over the course of the year, seeing him play and knowing him a little bit and just knowing the impact and seeing the impact he made on the players below, you know, underneath him is evident by David Price, a guy who's a very well-established veteran player who's done probably mostly any, you know, everything in his career you could possibly do, and he's still wearing a jersey in honor of a former teammate. So it shows you some of these older veteran guys, how they leave their marks on these guys. And I guess if anything, you can see how valuable they still are in the game.
Let's right? go out to
what,
an...
What did you say, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I mean, that's, for me, I mean, it blows you away when you hear something like that.
Well, I mean, I think these teams are so quick to switch to a young team, and you can see that impact that older veteran guys can still make to some of the younger guys, and I think that's evident by, you know, the way Jamie is getting his number one, and you know, I guess the way Charlie did, too.
Hey, isn't that what's going on not only in baseball but in business, where everybody's just looking at the data and they're not looking at the people? And how do you expect somebody to reach their potential if they don't have somebody, especially in sports? I mean, you know the trials and tribulations a baseball player goes through mentally, 162 games. Isn't it more about helping them through that point in time than it is to show them, hey, this is how you hit a 3-2 slider?
Yeah, I think a lot of been there, done that helps out a lot in everything. Like you said, it doesn't matter, baseball, business, life. I think a lot of us are learning in our quarantine how important relationships are, and being able to talk and have someone to bounce things off face to face is plays an intricate part in our daily lives. And we can do everything by the phone, on these Zoom and stuff like that, but it's having sometimes those heart-to-heart, face-to-face conversations with a person who's been there and done it and experienced a lot of things, whatever trade you're in, especially, baseball, when it's such a quick flash-in-the-pan type job, and a veteran guy can say, I've been there, I've done that, I've felt these things. It's not abnormal, and this is how I dealt with them, and, you have a sounding board. So, it's one where I think you definitely need that presence, and luckily this Dodger team has some great veteran presence on it.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, Andre, I know you won't toot your own horn, but I will say this. We're getting closer to the top of the hour where we're going to replay one of Cody Bellinger's MVP-type games last year in his rookie year, and maybe moving forward, even when you weren't on the team every day. How much did he lean on you to try to get through some of those mental days where he was striving to be somebody better?
Yeah, I mean, when you're in that situation, you just don't try to harp on someone too much or be too overbearing. You just, when you see them kind of get that little, hair wire lost, look, you kind of snap them back in place, let them know that it's going to be all right. And he was by me, in the locker room, and was one where just always checking, making sure he was, in the right headspace. And when he's doing his good stuff, you let him go. When he's struggling, you kind of go over there and just give him a few questions and hopefully have the right answers for him. And it's just nice to have that. I can remember when I first came up having guys like that, and even in the middle, later in my career, being able to have guys like that. So it's just having someone who, like I said, being able to lean on and know that they've been there and gone through the same things. And, Cody has done a lot quicker than a lot of guys and a lot better than a lot of guys. So he's done well and learned well.
And I would say one thing about him, obviously I'm not with him every day, and you know him a lot better than I do, but he hasn't changed from the first day I met him, even with all the success he's had and the attention he's had.
No, I mean, he's receptive still. I mean, it's not like, he's achieved pretty much everything you can in your first couple of years of being in the big leagues, and, still a humble guy, still approachable. I think you remember that day out there, if you saw it on his Instagram, when I went out to fantasy camp, he was working out at camp there in January, and he still came over to say hi, took pictures with the guys, and wasn't above coming out there and just being a guy who, is the former MVP and all that stuff. So you can still see that he's, humbled and walks with a lot to prove and isn't going to just, be bigger and better than everything as the success comes.
Hey, that's like you too, and that's why you're here, and that's why you're taking phone calls, and we have one more before we say goodnight this Wednesday night. Let's go out to High Energy, Manny Ingardina. You're on with Andre Ethier. What's up, Manuel?
Oh, inspired as usual by the French Prince of Bel-Air by way of Arizona. Tip of the cap as well to the teachers, like you guys said earlier, man. I mean, they are the backbone of not only like every city, but this great nation. Hey, man, just good stuff with you guys. Really appreciate you guys doing what you do. Thank you for coming in every Wednesday night. Andre, you are always a class act, one of my favorites. And, man, let's keep it going. Hopefully, You know, at some point we get back to baseball.
Hey, Manny, you going to let Andre talk, or are you just going to talk? You going to ask Andre a question, or did you just call to say hello? You have a question for him? Come on.
Don't interrupt the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's ratting off a lot of good stuff, all right, Dave?
I mean, all right.
It's going to be the Manny and Andre show. We'll get Dave off the air.
It's all good. Hey, who was the toughest pitcher you've ever faced, Andre? Have a great night.
There we go, Manny.
All right. I like it. Toughest pitcher I ever faced was right-hand. I can do two. Right-hander was King Felix. Felix Hernandez there with Seattle. Only faced him once in a game. And left-hander, toughest I ever faced at the top of his game was probably CC Sabathia. When he was, we faced him when he was with Cleveland, and he was, I think it was 2010, maybe 2009, 2010. I think they came and played us at Dodger Stadium. Don't know what year for sure, but I remember facing him, and I didn't have a real chance of making solid contact against him. And he was up there just dominant and you know, pounding strikes on a lot of pitches that were chase balls that you had no choice but to either commit to swing or take a pitch and hopefully the ball. So, those are two guys that you know always stick out in my mind that were very two tough pitchers that gave me trouble.
Hey, you and CC Sabathia should have been teammates in 2009, but luckily we're out of time for this show, so we won't get into that. Thanks again for another Wednesday night,
no,
Dre.
I appreciate it. Anytime, Dave, and like I said, look forward to it. And we'll see everyone or hear everyone again in 7 days. And, you know, I wish everyone the best 7 days of this quarantine and keep, you know, making L.A. County and everyone proud of staying home and doing your neighbor a favor by respecting, you know, what's going on right now.
All right, Dre. Thanks a lot for doing this again, and we will talk to you next Wednesday night.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
There he goes, Andre Ethier, every Wednesday night on Dodger Talk, taking your phone calls. If we didn't get to you tonight, call back next week. And in case you missed any of the show, you can podcast it at am570lasports.com or by downloading the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, Dodgers Replay, Dodgers Brewers from last April, Belly Show. Don't go anywhere. See ya.